We're going to be davening Marv approximately at 5 of, and the fast ends at 5:18. 5:18 this afternoon. Tomorrow morning we'll be davening Shacharis as we did this morning at 8 o'clock a.m. For those that have been coming to Mincha Marav, we've been discussing as much as in depth as I possibly could the ideas of the Shemona Esrei. And we're up to the third paragraph, which is Ata Kadosh, Shimcha Kadosh, the paragraph of Kiddush. And we mentioned, actually quoting from the words of the Avud Raham, as well as other Mefarshim, that the first three paragraphs actually correspond to our patriarchs, to our Avos, Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. And Avud Raham says, Nei shechasimos sholosh brochos harishonos elu romzos lo'avos. Exactly as I said, that the first three paragraphs, there's some type of hint to each of our patriarchs. And some of them are more obvious than others. The first paragraph, Chasimus Bracha Rishona, Himagin Avraham. So obviously the first paragraph has something to do with Avram Avinu, which we discussed at length. But Chasimus Bracha Shnia, Mechay Mesim, Kenegid Yitzchak. So we said the second paragraph, which is the resurrection of the dead, and all the different other forms of Tchias Mesim that we experience in our lifetime, that corresponds to Yitzchak. And one reason we gave, which is not brought down here by the Avud Raham, Avud Raham tells us the reason by the Akedah, by Akedah Yitzchak, that when his father took the knife, it was moments from killing his son, and at that moment, the Avud Raham says he was choshev kemes. He was already as though he was dead. Whether or not perhaps his soul did depart from him, or because Avraham was given the credit for having taken his life even though he didn't, therefore it's as though he's dead. Then afterwards, as he was told, instructed not to slaughter his son, it's considered to be ki'ilu hichyoso, as though there's an element of tchias mesim. So that's how the Avud Raham says that this is really the first person who experienced this concept of tchias mesim. We also mentioned that Yitzchak embodies some element of Gevurah, which is the name of this paragraph, because the Mishnah in Perkei Avos tells us that a Gibur is a Kovish es Yitzro, one who can withhold and control themselves and their desires, their Yetzirah. Can you imagine a person, a grown man at 37, that all we do is find this whole Nisayon, this whole test is by Avraham Avinu, nothing about Yitzchak. Yitzchak was the person who was the one who was going to be killed, and yet he was willing to accept himself to this role in his life, which is tremendous ability to be Kovishes Yitzro, which is Gavur, which is true strength, which is the element of this paragraph. And then the Avud Raham says this paragraph of Kedusha, this third paragraph about HaKadosh, corresponds, well, there's only one left, to Yaakov. Chasimus Bracha Shlishes Hakel HaKadosh Keneged Yaakov. And he says, the reason for this, and he brings down one of the three reasons which we'll entertain today, because what this whole paragraph is element of Kedusha, of holiness, of perfectness within by HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and Yaakov was also the only of the three patriarchs who did not have a Zera Pasul, did not have anything which was invalid. Rather, all of his children embodied this element of Kedusha, of holiness. And therefore, says the Avud Raham, that's why Yaakov represents this paragraph. It's also brought down the Medrash, which I don't have in front of me, that says that by the famous story of Yaakov Avinu and his taking his little nap in the middle of the night, and the prophetic dream of the ladder, which was going up toward the Shemayim for the heavens, that the Medrash tells us that the Malach and the angels who were on the top of this sulam, of this ladder, they actually said the end of the bracha to Yaakov, Baruch Atah Hashem, Hakel HaKadosh. And therefore, they have to understand the significance of why they said it at that particular time, but nonetheless, that's how the Medrash explains Yaakov's connection to the third paragraph of the Shemot Esrei. Perhaps today we'll come up with a third approach, discussing how Yaakov is connected somehow to this bracha. But before we do that, I'd like to explain Yaakov's connection to today, which is Asar B'Teves. In a few moments, we're going to be finishing the fast. It's probably worthwhile knowing why we didn't eat today. It's important to understand the significance of the times. So it's brought down that the Asar B'Teves, the 10th day of Teves, is not just a one-day tragedy. It was actually 3 days, as the Chazal put it, 3 days of darkness fell upon the world. Of course, today is the third of those days. Asar B'Teves is the time in which, as we discussed over Shabbos a little bit, how Nebuchadnezzar, who was the king of Babel at the time, that he laid siege to Yerushalayim. Yerushalayim, which represents, of course, the Beis HaMikdash in Yerushalayim, is the Or Shel Olam, is that which provides and gives light to the world. So Nebuchadnezzar, by coming around and circling the city of Yerushalayim, ultimately the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash is a way that the fire, the flame of Torah was extinguished. Yesterday on Shabbos was the ninth day of Teves, which was the loss of the great tzaddik Ezra HaSofer, Ezra the scribe, that he was, as we mentioned, as the Gemara actually says, that if Moshe would not have been the one who gave over the Torah, then Ezra would have been the next candidate. He would have been just as qualified to be able to have done so if Moshe didn't do it himself. So therefore, Ezra represents Torah, which is light, Torah or. And again, by his passing, it's the extinguishing of this powerful flame, the flame of Torah. And when it came to the third, which was actually the first of the days of darkness, which was Ches, or the eighth day of Teves, was brought down in the Gemara in Megillah, which we discussed a little bit at length as well on Shabbos, which I'd like to just reiterate and discuss the significance of this time of darkness. But the Gemara in Megillah on Daf Tes tells us, Masa b'Talmai HaMelech, there was this king, Talmai, who was the king of Egypt, as Rashi says, Shekines Shivim v'Shtayim Zekenim, that he gathered up 72 elders, V'Echnisim v'Shtayim Batim, and he put them in different chambers, each one by themselves, V'Ogilu Lehem El Ma'akinsan, he didn't tell them the significance of why they were summoned, why they had to go into these different rooms. V'Nichnas Eitzel Kolech V'Echon, and this king went to each of these sages, these rabbis, and he told them, he said, Kisu li Torah Moshe Ribchem, go ahead and write this Torah, and I want you to translate it, not in a language which I didn't understand until now, but rather I want you to translate it to Yavanis, to Greek. And by you doing this, I'll be able to understand this, the beauty of the Torah. And it's said, perhaps in a joking fashion, said that what was the nace? The miracle was that even though they didn't know what they were supposed to do, and they were all in different rooms, they were all able to agree. And they say maybe that's the only time 72 Jews could possibly agree, is that they are all in separate rooms. But maybe if they're all together, that would have been a tremendous, even bigger nace, that they would have written the same text. But regardless, this was something which occurred at this time. And this was a time of choshech, of tremendous darkness. Yavan, Greek, which is what was translated, is also the name of this nation, Yavanim. The Syrian Greeks represent, as the Midrashim explained, to choshech, to darkness. And all we have to do is look outside. We know that we're living in a time of the year where there is also choshech. We're living, as we mentioned about a month ago, the Maral says that it's no coincidence that Hanukkah falls round the time of the winter solstice, when there's the least amount of light and the most amount of darkness in this time. So what was exactly this choshech? What was this darkness that was experienced on this day, the eighth day of Teves? So after all, big deal, all they did was translate it. So the Gemara continues and explains what exactly did they do that was so significant that they all agreed. So they understood that there were certain things that if they would have translated the Torah literally, then it would have caused problems for the Jewish people. For example, the Gemara says that the way they began the Torah, as we know, it's Bereshis Bar Elokim, they wrote it, of course, translating it as Elokim Bar Bereshit, that God created in the beginning. Because he was concerned, as Rashi explains, that if we would have translated it as Bereshis Bar Elokim, they would have maybe have thought that meant there was some type of deity, there was some type of God by the name of in the beginning, or Bereshit, and that deity created Elohim, created God. And therefore, because they lived among people that didn't believe in one God, in monotheism, they needed to change around the Torah so that it would not be misconstrued. And the Gemara continues and gives us other examples, such as, Asa Adam B'Tselem V'Demus, We know that the famous translation is, let us make man, which again could lead a person to the misunderstanding that there's more than one God. And therefore, they had to write it in a singular form so that there wouldn't be confusion. And it continues, and the Gemara says, Vayichal b'yom hashishi v'yishbos b'yom hashvi'i, which is not the text that we actually were familiar with saying by Kiddush. It says that here that Hashem rested on the sixth day, because if it would say that Hashem rested, stopped his work on the seventh, it would imply that he continued to do some work on Shabbos itself, which we understand he brought into the world Menucha, which is the element of rest. And then it continues and brings all these different examples, which I'm not going to go through all of them. Perhaps one of the most famous ones is that when it comes to the non-kosher animals that a person is not allowed to eat. So the Torah enumerates, explains what each of them are. And one of them, which have only one of the two signs, is an arneves, which is a type of rabbit, a hare. And they removed that word from their Greek translation. And the Gemara says, Mimnei she'ishu shel talmei arneves shema. That the reason why they knew that it wouldn't have offended necessarily the king by his name Talmai, but Talmai was married and he had a queen and her name was Arneves, which literally in Hebrew means rabbit or hare. Shel yomer, that this king would not say upon reading this, that it says that this Arneves is not kosher, that they would say, Sachu bi ha-yuhudim v'atilu sham ishti b'torah. That the sages, these rabbis, are obviously trying to make a fool out of me, and therefore that's why he stuck my wife's name into the Torah. So because of this, they changed all these things. So what exactly is the choshech over here, the darkness? Again, we can understand, obviously, Asar B'Teves, tremendous darkness, the ultimate destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. You can understand the ninth of Teves, the loss of Ezra HaSofer. It was a tremendous Torah luminary. So what exactly is this issue over here, that this was the tremendous choshech, the tremendous darkness? And perhaps the idea of why this is choshech, why this changing and the Torah and putting it into a different language, putting it into Greek, is that there's nothing wrong per se with translation. However, the issue with what Talmai wanted to do was he wanted to study the Torah because he considered it to be a scholarly work. He wanted to learn a little bit more about Jewish philosophy. And therefore, he felt that this was another subject matter which would be a very nice thing for him to master. With the problem with that is that there's no ruchnis, there's no spiritual connection to the Torah itself, but rather he just looks at it as just another subject, which is really the ultimate level of choshech, it's the ultimate darkness, is taking the Torah, which is light, and by giving a person the misconception, letting them think that it's just another subject, it's really nothing, it doesn't have any holiness to it. That's really the ultimate level of choshech, which is a big challenge. The challenge that we find in even in our school systems, that we want to be able to show children the interplay between the Judaic and general studies, but at the same time we have to be very sensitive to make sure that we don't treat our Hebrew subjects like it's just that, just a regular subject, but rather that it has tremendous kedusha, tremendous holiness. And the message that this Chazal, this Gemara, is telling us in Megillah is that we have to change it, because otherwise there would be he would get offended. But how about us? I mean, apparently it sounds like there's things that are wrong. But the answer is that the starting point is, if you look at the Torah, that it's something which is Torah, was given to Moshe on Har Sinai, then even though there's questions, that's okay to have questions. You're allowed to have questions. But if the starting point, it comes with Kedusha, there's some spiritual connection to it, then that's fine. And with that said, I'd like to conclude with the idea of Yaakov Avinu. We know that each of our Avos instituted different tefillos. Abraham, morning prayer of Shacharis, Yitzchak, Mincha, and Yaakov was mesaken the tefillah of Arvit, the evening tefillah. We know that when we daven Maariv, it's dark outside, it's Choshech. And it mentions in this dream with the ladder, the Pasuk says, V'nisulam mutzav arza v'roshim agiha shemayim, that this ladder was, on the very bottom of it, was touching the ground. But if you would look all the way up, this ladder continued all the way up to the Shemayim, all the way up to the sky. And perhaps the message of what Yaakov is teaching us, of what really what Kedusha is that the physical world and the spiritual world are not two separate things, but rather it's our job to connect with a ladder or in some way the physical world to the spiritual world. That's what real kedusha is. That's what real holiness is. To take something which is spiritual already and to say, okay, this is ruchnias, that's easy. Anyone could do it. But to take the mundane, the physical, to elevate it, that's the greatest level of kedusha. And it's no coincidence that we find when it comes to marriage, which some religions feel that the physical world and the spiritual world cannot coexist, therefore it's not possible to get married and still be a religious person. For us, we consider it a holy act. That's what's called kedushin, which is holy, taking what's seemingly the most physical and elevating it. So it's one Friday night, taking wine, which looks like a dangerous substance that we don't want to sell during certain days of the week because it's disconnected to the spiritual element of that day. We say, no, we can take a cup of wine and we can make kiddush. We can make kiddush on it. So therefore, the message of Yaakov Avinu, of the letter, is the connection of the physical world to the spiritual world. When a person does this, we'll be able to remove the choshech, the darkness, to light. As we said in Slichos this morning, in conclusion, we said, V'tagia eschoshchi ba'orchel ha'ira es neshev chishki ki ata neri, which means, brighten my darkness by illuminating with your light the night I long for. For you are my light. We should ask for we should hope and pray that even in the times of choshech, in the times of darkness, we have to ask HaKadosh Baruch Hu to give us the or, give us the light that we'll be able to see through, to be able to live through these days of choshech.